Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Modern Web Podcast. I'm your host, Ray Shan. Making and accepting payments on the web is quite cumbersome. Thankfully, the new Payment Request API and vendors like Apple and Stripe make the implementation simple and secure. Molly Dalton and Zach Koch, who work closely with Edge, Chrome, and the Payment Request API, join us to discuss how to use this new standard for seamless payments on the web. Enjoy the show. Well, welcome to the show, guys. Molly, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. My name is Molly Dalton. I'm a program manager on Microsoft Edge. I primarily focus on web payments, and I'm also a member of the Web Payments Working Group in the W3C.
Great. Welcome. Zach, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm a product manager at Google, working on Chrome. And one of my big things I focus on is web payments. And I am also a member of the Web Payments Working Group, and I am an editor on the payment request specification.
Cool. Well, first, let me thank you guys for all the work you do for the community and help to drive the standards forward, or just really drive the web forward. We all appreciate your work.
You're welcome.
So do you guys actually work actively together frequently?
I mean, we meet at least a few times a week on the W3C calls.
Sure.
Yeah, I find that especially as Chrome and Microsoft, of course, like, you know, we're pretty big browsers in that sense. And so I think a lot of people like look to us. And so, you know, we like Molly and I are both present on the working group calls on a weekly basis. And then we have a separate sync, I think, which as part of like sort of the editor group to work through some of the hard issues and figure out how we're going to move the spec forward and stuff like that. So yes, lots of time, I feel like, lately.
I would say that's quite frequent. Do you guys only meet to talk about the payment request API, or do you guys also work on other things with W3C?
Yeah, so I'm mostly web payments. In terms of the W3C, my involvement basically starts and ends there. There's some identity work, but for the most part, it's all web payments.
Sure. Cool.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat, so I focus primarily on web payments. Of course, there's a whole bunch of different specs out there. So
great. Well, let's talk a little bit about payments on the web. People have been accepting payments since way before the .com boom, right? And back in the days, it was super challenging. I remember when I did my first startup, we were trying to accept payments on the web. I had to call the bank, and they would not let us do it. And then I had to call this company. I think it was called Authorize.net, which I believe is still around. And the paperwork just took several days. It was quite challenging. And then the technical implementation was also quite challenging. But we've come a long way since then. So what is the current status of accepting payments on the web, just in general, even beyond the payment request API?
Yeah, I think that it's definitely, I think online payments has sort of been like through this weird renaissance in the last couple of years. I had the same experience as you, like many years ago. The burden of like collecting payments online was very high. It was very difficult. And a number of really excellent companies have entered into the mix to make this easier, right? Stripe came along and focused on the developer. Braintree followed up. And now there's a large number of companies out there that are really focusing on making collecting payments on the web easier. You know, all it is these days is you sign up and you can basically start collecting almost immediately. And that's really great. I think that it's still fundamentally credit card based, that has some problems. But that's you know, one of the limitations of the web as it exists currently. But I think from where we were even like 10 years ago, it's like a world of difference in the world of especially from a developer or a company perspective for accepting payments.
Definitely. What do you think, Molly?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think in the last 10, 15 years, if we just look at the web in general, it's changed a lot. That being said, I do think there's some things that still resemble an older web. You know, I think we'll talk a lot about this, but checkout forms are one of them. You know, it still kind of feels a little bit like something we would have seen a few years ago versus something more in the modern web space. So,
Definitely. And one of the recent trends, or maybe not so recent anymore, is web going to mobile, which for a lot of properties, it actually generates more traffic than desktop. And on mobile devices, it's even more challenging to accept payments. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. I think that a lot of people are using mobile. Mobile's pretty common nowadays. I think actually it was maybe Zach who said in his talk that a lot of people are going to mobile to research and going to desktop to purchase. And, that's obviously a challenge. There's a lot of ways that can be improved, and that seems to be a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, so we definitely are seeing this, like, this huge growth in mobile, right? And I frequently make fun of the way the web works for checkout. I make fun of it because if you think about it, the desktop model like took the in-store real life model and just applied it to the web, right? So I walk into a store, I grab my shopping cart, and I start walking through the aisles, adding things into my shopping cart. And we were like, yeah, that seems like a good model for the internet too. And so now when you browse websites, you like have a shopping cart or a shopping bag, you add items to it. You then have to go find the shopping bag. You then click on the shopping bag. You see a list of items in your shopping bag. You then click on the checkout button. You then go through the forms to buy the thing. And then the move to mobile happened. And guess what? Like, the same metaphor held true. That, like, I have a shopping bag. I buy lots of things. I, like, then finally go through the checkout flow. I see the forms. I have to on my little tiny virtual keyboard, like, type in all of my details around my address and my 16-digit credit card number and my expiration and my CVC. And maybe I'm on a public bus and I don't know what I'm doing. And then I try to check out. And it's not really working. I mean, yes, we're seeing a huge growth in mobile, but I think it is definitely true for the majority of merchants that they're not seeing conversions follow that growth. So just because their users are moving over to mobile doesn't mean they're seeing the conversion at the same rate. And I think that's in large part what we're trying to fix, is in we have to break down old metaphors of behavior, I think, and then like bring new stuff to light into the web platform, especially in light of mobile.
Absolutely. And don't forget that creepy guy behind you who's watching you as you pull out your credit card from your wallet and try to read the numbers off of it.
Yeah, no, exactly, right? I mean, and by the way, the fact that we're still on the web exchanging credit card numbers, as in like the fact that the model to this day continues to be take all of the sensitive information that you need to move money out of your account and freely give it over to some unknown backend. And the fact that that's still the status quo on the web today is another topic that we can discuss and why that's maybe not the best model as we move forward.
Right. I'm kind of curious. Let's do a mini survey. Molly, what are your purchase patterns like just day to day as a consumer?
Well, I'm a bit of a weirdo. I actually shop in stores a lot.
Uh-huh. Sure, I mean, that's great. Yeah,
I tend to I don't like to return things, so I'm kind of weird like that. But I still shop online. I actually buy all my groceries online, if you guys can believe that.
Mm.
So, I may go into stores to buy clothes, but I don't even enter a grocery store like a normal person. So, yeah.
Sure. And do you mainly buy online do you mainly buy on desktop or mobile?
I mainly buy on desktop. Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. How about you, Zach?
I don't do much shopping in person these days, if I can avoid it. Definitely more online. And recently I found myself making the shift to mobile exclusive. So it used to be that I would, let's say, like come home from work, and maybe I'd sit up on the couch and like open up my laptop and start working. But I've definitely found that over the last couple of years, I've been making this shift where like my mobile device is like my main browsing device. And like as a byproduct of that, it's become my main shopping device in that sense. Now I don't buy that much stuff. It's not like I'm like daily buying things.
Right.
But definitely since, we talked about this, like, with a home and stuff like that, we're always trying to be like, oh man, we forgot to buy painter's tape. Mm-hmm. And so, Amazon has 2-day delivery, so we'll buy painter's tape. But yeah, my phone is weirdly becoming for me, which wouldn't have expected, a primary, interaction device.
Sure. Okay. How about this question? App versus mobile web. What do you prefer?
I think I'm both. I have both. I will say I feel like I am a statistic in the sense that I have multiple pages of apps on my device here. I use very few of them on a frequent basis. I spend most of my time on mobile Chrome, basically on Chrome on iOS. And I don't mean that as a shameless plug, although it could be. I just like in reality, like today, you know, we're researching a topic. I jump into Chrome and I do it. You know, I was on the Home Depot website. I'm in Chrome and I do it. These things might have Home Depot probably has native application, but for me, it's not worth the burden. Like I don't shop at Home Depot enough to merit like downloading the Home Depot application and installing it on my phone.
Right.
I need it when I need it. And for that, the web is perfect.
Right. Well, I have to agree with you, Molly. I also like to shop for clothes in store. I also don't like to return things. But I have to agree with you, Zach. I actually use mobile web more often when I shop around. And that seemed to be the trend because I was interviewing earlier at what's that clothing store in San Francisco that's really hip nowadays?
Oh yeah, is there just one?
Everlane. I was at Everlane, and I was speaking to the Everlane folks, and they seem to be leaning more towards mobile web, and that seemed to be the trend for a lot of apparel retailers like COS, like Uniqlo. They all seem to only have mobile web nowadays. But I remember when I was at Shutterfly, I think their mobile app was growing faster and had a bigger share than mobile web. So perhaps different parts of the e-commerce spectrum prefer different methods differently.
Yeah, you know, I think that... all right, yeah. So one of our PMs actually that I'm good friends with, Owen Campbell Moore, is one of our web platform PMs who spends lots of time thinking about how we bring capabilities into the web platform, things like push notifications, et cetera, has this chart that he pushes through about like, what should you develop, a mobile web app or like a native application? And it really comes down to like engagement, I think. That if you have a small set of highly engaged people, that a native app is almost always better. Mm-hmm. But I think the reality is that for shopping, like it's not super often that a store has a like set of like highly engaged users. It's like, you know, speaking of San Francisco clothing stores, like I love, there's a place called Azalea. There's one in, there's a couple of them, really great clothes. Even if they had an app, I wouldn't download it. It's not like on a weekly basis. I'm like, well, let's see what's at Azalea.
True.
No, it's like sometimes, you know, you happen to need clothes and in that moment, Azalea is a place to go. And so because it's low engagement, but it's very easy for me to get there on the mobile web. I think the mobile web wins in that sense. And I think that's what's interesting about shopping in particular is that it's, not everyone can be Amazon. And who happens to benefit from really high engagement. And so while everyone was building web apps or started like native applications for a long time, I'm not sure it's proven itself to be a really strong and viable economic model. And I think which is why the web is sort of coming back because instant access and all that great stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree with you as well, Zach. Like that's the kind of interesting thing about shopping is that you are not going there every single day. You're going there once a week, a couple times a month. It's not just this regular occurrence. And it doesn't make sense to fill up your phone with a whole bunch of shopping apps if, you know, you can go on the web and just use it that way. If you're only shopping at one location every single day, sure, maybe. But when it comes to shopping, it makes sense to have it be on the mobile web.
Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the payment request API. Which is there to help us shop on the web easier. Molly, would you like to describe what the payment request API is?
Yeah, so the payment request API is a way to streamline the checkout process by generating a UI that's going to be unique to each browser. It will populate the user's information, and from there they can just check out and they don't have to enter in any information each time at separate websites.
And what stage is the payment request API in nowadays, Zach?
Yeah. So actually, I think we're in a pretty good state these days, especially in terms of like, and W3C APIs now quickly we've moved. you know, we formed the working group like only now, maybe 2 years ago at this point. And we, of course, Chrome is shipping the API. Edge and Molly, of course, can fact check me here. I believe just started rolling out support for payment request in Edge with the new Windows update that just hit the download circuit. I'm looking to Molly to confirm.
That's
excellent.
Right. 4 days
excellent.
Ago.
And so
maybe 6 days ago, April 11th.
Nice.
Yeah. And so, and then, and in terms of in W3C terms, I suppose, we are nearing what's called candidate recommendation, which is a fancy W3C way, I think, of basically saying final draft. Mm-hmm. So it's our expectation that the API itself is feature complete and in a good enough state that we say to everyone, hey, go implement this. And then the only reason we make changes is because something's broken in our implementations or something's unspecified. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Chrome and Edge are shipping, I think, tells you that it's a largely, we think, feature complete API that offers user value.
Absolutely. And how are Safari and Firefox on the payment request API?
So, well, Firefox is easy. Firefox, of course, they're members of the working group and they've started implementing. And I suspect that they'll launch at some point in this year. They've been really active inside the working group, helping the specifications along. Marcos is one of our co-editors on the spec from Firefox. And so I think we'll see something from them in the not too distant future. Apple's always a harder one. I'm not going to try to predict what Apple will do. I can only state what they have done up to this point. And Apple is a member of the working group. They've been a member since the very beginning, actually. And I think they're committed to sort of the open web. I do think that they did end up shipping a proprietary API through Safari, which for Apple Pay in particular, which is Apple Pay JS. And I guess, you know, we continue to work with them. We continue to sort of hope that they'll also support payment requests. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. But I think we're doing the best we can as editors of the spec to make sure that whatever needs they have are being met from an API level.
Mm-hmm. Molly, what are your thoughts on all the ecosystem players coming together to get this spec out?
You mean the browsers?
Sure. Yeah, the browsers. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really exciting. I feel like there's a lot of momentum here. The fact that, you know, we have, you know, essentially some major browsers out there that are excited and developing and shipping that's great news. I mean, that means that people believe in this. We believe in this. And, you know, it's something that's getting pushed forward.
Sure, sure. And what is the next step or is the next stage? Would it be the final stage of getting the spec finalized?
I think the final stage is that it's a runaway success and we all make billions of dollars and we leave happy and satisfied. But I think from a W3C perspective, the next step is that we enter into what's called candidate recommendation. Mm-hmm. And then at that point, we hope that it's evidence that there are multiple browser shipping and our implementations are interoperable, which is a fancy way of saying that the same, if a developer does the same thing across different browsers, that it all behaves the same way. And if that's the case, we get to, we become a formal recommendation.
Sure. And in order to implement the web payment API as is now, what is the developer experience like?
So one special thing about payment request API, because it's W3C spec, mm-hmm. is that you only have to write code once. And, you know, it'll be, as Zach said, interoperable in all browsers that support the API. Mm-hmm. Actually, developing the code, I know we put out some developer guides. Chrome also put out some excellent developer guides and, you know, you can go through and read it. It's actually, it really isn't that involved of an API. You know, it's fairly straightforward. You know, each section makes sense. There's not too many crazy things happening. So I'd recommend everyone go try it out and test it out on your site or a test site.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would add as well. Yeah, I think it's a relatively simple API. It is, there's not that much you can do with it. And it, especially if you compare it to some of our more complicated APIs in the web platform, like service workers, it's a breeze. I think that, like if you're a relatively proficient JavaScript developer and you already have, let's say, a payment gateway or payment processor like partnership set up accepting credit cards, you can probably be up and running with the basic implementation in an hour or two. It's a fairly minimal API surface, I think.
Yeah, actually, that brings up kind of a good point, too, is that something about the API is that it's not meant to interfere with how you process payments. Mm-hmm. It's literally, you know, to pull up a UI populated with the information that the merchant needs to complete the transaction. So you're not going to have to worry about any kind of, I mean, you can use your old processing system. It's not, it just kind of plugs in there.
Sure. Yeah, that's nice. And I have to agree, I did read the spec from the beginning to the end, and it is relatively straightforward compared to some of the other ones, definitely.
It's funny, I don't think I've even read the spec from backwards to forwards at this point, forwards to backwards at this point. It's like, because, you know, it develops, like, over time, you focus on the section, and then you, like, finish, and then you come back, and so you're like, oh, you read it from top to bottom. I don't know. I should probably do that again. It's been some time.
Yeah, the specs get pretty long, but I actually worked as a framework engineer on the JavaScript framework. So I think I eventually get used to reading specs, reading developer documentation. Like our framework was heavily inspired by UIKit and Cocoa. So I read all of those. And you end up learning a lot. A lot of the thinking process really go into the spec.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just impressed you read the whole thing, quite frankly.
Thanks. I really enjoy reading the ones regarding CSS animation. They're pretty fun, and it really shows you like what you can or cannot do.
Yeah, that's we all have our hobbies, Ray, and sure. I'm glad you have yours.
I'm just a little weird. Have you guys had experience using or working with the Apple Pay.js API by any chance?
I personally haven't had any experience working with it.
Mm-hmm. I have experienced it insofar as I did do a deep dive into differences between the APIs and like the services that exist, as well as like what it takes, I think, from a developer perspective to go from, I had this idea that I want to like implement this API to being able to launch in production. And I've never like implemented one in a production facing environment. So, but I'm familiar enough, I think, with the core of the API.
Hmm. Hey, what do you think? Like, what are some of the major differences between the two?
Well, I actually think the APIs are quite similar. I mean, I think it's a testament that we're on the right track from an API level when they come out with something similar. Hmm. It's also good to remember that Apple was part of the working group. For many months before they launched Apple Pay.js. And I think that especially when they launched Apple Pay.js, the shape of the APIs were very similar in terms of how we viewed the world. Like you instantiate a payment request and then you pass in like options around that payment request. And then you ultimately get this thing called the payment response. And that payment response contains data that you can use to process a transaction. I think all the core pieces are there. Mm. I think that the biggest differences at this point is, of course, to be obvious, that like payment request is designed to be used in an open way so that any payment method in the world could theoretically play in and work with payment request, whereas Apple Pay, of course, is designed to only work with Apple Pay, which means that a huge API surface is missing because there's a whole part of payment request where you pass in to say, here's how I can get paid, and Apple Pay just assumes it's always Apple Pay. And then, of course, Apple Pay has being tied to Apple Pay.js, being tied to Apple Pay, has a lot of Apple Pay specific requirements, right? Like runtime merchant validation, where you like ping back to the Apple servers. They do a lot to basically like verify that the merchant is who they think they are and reduce fraud, etc. And so, I think that they've built some of those things directly into the specification that we don't have, or say they built it into Apple Pay.js that we don't have in the specification.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the shape of and surface of the API is very similar.
Interesting. How about for vendors like Stripe and Balance? Would they wrap the payment request API?
Yeah, that's a good question. They could. Yeah, totally. And in fact, I think that it's the reason this is actually a really complicated question, I think. It's complicated because it kind of depends what you're hoping to get out of it. Apple Pay is easy because it's opinionated. Payment request is not necessarily as opinionated. And because it can be used in a whole wide variety of ways, I think it's reasonable to think that payment request is a tool, right? Mm. And how any individual uses a given tool is up to their business needs and requirements and what they're focusing on. And so, for example, if you go into Stripe Console right now, you can set up Apple Pay right now, right? You can say, and they have an integration with Apple. Mm. And if you enable that, then ultimately they have to wrap your API because that's part of their value add and their service. If you look at Android Pay is also available on the web, but only through a payment request. And so if you wanted to support from Stripe Android Pay, you'd have to wrap it for payment request. But that doesn't necessarily mean you're using payment request in the open way that it's designed. And so this is sort of a subtle distinction, I think, that it's hard to sometimes clarify, which is that payment request can kind of be whatever you want it to be in some sense. It can be one way just to get tokenized payments onto the web, or it can be a complete checkout replacement flow. And where Stripe or Braintree or any of those vendors will end up on that spectrum, I think, is up to them, and I think up to us to prove over time that payment request has value in that sort of default checkout flow. Mm. I don't know. Molly, what do you think?
I think that covered it. Solid answer.
it would definitely be interesting to hear from them as well. Maybe next time.
Yeah. It's always good. They play a very interesting role in the ecosystem, right? Like gateways. So yeah, it'd be good to hear from them directly.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about how the payment request API actually get the payment from the user. So on a mobile device, there are a lot of central stores for user information and payment information. I'm assuming that the payment request API would tap into those. Is that correct?
So for Microsoft, it's going to be tied to your Microsoft account. Doesn't matter if it's on your mobile or if it's on your desktop, it's going to be associated with your Microsoft account.
How about, would that be at the operating system layer or would that be at the browser layer? Like, do you sign, like if you use...
It's going to be the same Microsoft account that you have to...
So for example, if you use Edge, would you sign in so Edge recognizes you as a user? Similar to how Chrome does it?
It's going to be associated. So if you go to like your live.microsoft account, that's actually where the information is going to be stored. So it would be the same information that's stored for your Xbox or your operating system. So
interesting. So that makes it a cross-device, right? So you're not relying on the operating system or the browser. So that will work on mobile and on desktop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Zach, for Chrome, would the payment request API tap into your browser's credentials?
Yeah, again, yeah, good question. Complicated. Mm-hmm. So I can say that definitively right now, there's like what Chrome is shipping. Mm-hmm. And what Chrome is shipping right now is that when you we pull credit cards either from two places. One is directly from your local device. So Chrome allows you to store credit cards completely locally. Or if you're signed into the browser, we can also pull them from your Google account. I think very similar to the way that Molly just described for Microsoft. In addition to that, if you happen to have, let's say, Android Pay enabled on your device and a merchant supports Android Pay, then we can also pull credentials out of Android Pay, which are tokenized forms of payment. But it's always been the goal of Chrome to be open in the sense that, like, I don't necessarily think that users have to save their credentials with Chrome or with Google. They could save them with someone else. And of course, one of the fundamental notions of payment requests is that users should be able to... pay however that they want to pay. And that means storing their credentials wherever they want to store them. And so I think that this is something that we've been working on for a while in Chrome. And I think that we'll be announcing at some point, which is basically the ability to let another application provide payment credentials independent of just Chrome and or Google.
Mm, interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, great. Great.
And for the developers, if you are implementing the payment request API, how would you go about testing it?
I would start with writing the code. No. Well, I think that this all kind of comes back to the fact that I'll go back to what Molly said there, right? Which is that since we're not a processor, we assume you already have a way to, given some sort of payment credential, move money in the ecosystem based on that credential, mm-hmm. right? And I use the term credential because, like, we always think of credit cards, but when you pop into India, for example, credit cards are not very common. Like, there's other forms of payment out there, right? Like Paytm or the new UPI standard in India, et cetera. And so these credentials get passed back, and the browsers help facilitate the passing of that credential. And then once you have that in place, then we assume that you, like, can figure out in the ecosystem that you're a part of how to turn that into real cash. And so, but just to simplify it for a moment, let's say you were a brand new developer who was starting a brand new website, and you were selling widgets, beautiful online widgets, and you wanted to use payment requests for it. I guess what I would say is that number one is you should already have a relationship with a gateway or a processor like Stripe or Braintree or Aiden or whoever. There are a lot of great options out there, and you should pick one. And the key thing is that you should be able to, like, take a credit card that you get back from payment requests, for example, and, like, give it to them in exchange for payment. And so I know Stripe quite well, so I'll use Stripe. You know, you have their SDK on their website. They have a little, like, client-side JavaScript call you can make, which tokenizes that credit card. So you have that piece set up, and then you just call payment requests. And you say, hey, payment requests, I can support basic credit cards. And you then test it, and then the user sees this, like, great native UI. In the case of Microsoft, you see, like, a great Microsoft-specific UI. In the case of Chrome, you see a Material UI because it's a Google thing. So we, like, both of us try to optimize our UIs around what our users expect. And then the user will, like, either choose a credit card they already have or add a new one, and then you'll hit complete, and it comes back to the website. So that promise resolves. You've got that payment credential sitting there, and now you can, like, pass it on to that client at SDK of Stripes or Braintrees, and then, like, let the full test into the system run. So I think that for most people that already have existing implementations, like, you could, like, comment out your current code, like, for your form, replace it with a call to payment request, take the same response that you get from a form and send it off through the same channels, and I think it would be successful. So that sounds like the easiest way to get going. I don't know, Molly, does that jive with you?
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. You know, just kind of like what you said, it's meant to just work with what you have already. And you can always default to your traditional experience if the browser's not supported. So, you know, just kind of plug it in and see what it looks like from there.
Yeah, I think that's a great point that Molly just made, is like progressive enhancement. Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't, like, payment request is a convenience function for users. Stripe is great, of course, for developers, but, like, at the end of the day, if the form is the best you can offer users, we haven't made that big of a dent. And so payment request is really designed for users. But it's a new feature, and, you know, Chrome ships it on Android only. Edge ships it, and they just started rolling out. So you can't assume it's going to exist. You should treat it as a nice to have. But if you don't, you should be ready to fall back to your traditional checkout flows for sure.
What are some of the major players who have implemented this? Like, if I was to go out there and would like to try it live, where would I go?
Yeah, this gets tricky. So I think that it's still very new. And so I think that you'll find that both of our BD teams are probably independently exploring ways to promote growth. Mm-hmm. I think that if one merchant I can cite as of immediately right now that I'm comfortable citing is you can go to the Washington Post and you can subscribe. And if you subscribe on a Chrome and Android device, then you will see the payment request UI in play. I think that there are a bunch of tests running around the web with various merchants that you might be lucky enough to see. But I don't think we would be comfortable dropping those names yet right now.
Sure. Molly, do you know of any cool ones that people can try?
Yeah, so kind of the same boat as Zach. Like, it's still an early adoption, and we have, you know, a few important partners who are testing, but nothing to announce at this moment.
Sure, yeah, I understand. I do feel like if I am a merchant, I would definitely be testing. But it definitely feels early because even for Apple Pay.js, I so far haven't run to any major property accepting it. Also, in stores nowadays, a lot of places accept both Android Pay and Apple Pay, which is great. It's super convenient.
Yeah, I think, you know, payments are hard, right? I mean, they're really difficult to get going, and there's no flow more important to an online merchant than their checkout flow. And so just because like we come like, you know, frolicking along and say, I have a new API and we think it's great, like doesn't of course necessarily mean that everyone's going to rush to adopt. And you have to make a case for it. You have to make a case for why it's worthwhile. You have to make a case for how it fits into your development cycles and your workflows. And these are things that we're working on. I think we'll get there, and we're already making great progress, I think, but it is challenging, you know, and you have to be able to make a case. You have to be able to, and it's still new. So when you say that, we'll work on two browsers, and everyone's like, well, what about the other ones? You're like, well, it's coming. And so, these are all things that, play a part in sort of the whole like adoption curve and stuff like that, which make it, challenging. At the beginning. But again, I think that you'll start to see more public announcements about successes and stuff like that. Even if you look at Apple Pay, Apple Pay has been out for quite a number of years now, like certainly longer than Payment Request has, and still challenging. Just because, you know, merchants spend lots of time optimizing their flows. And, just because we come along and say we have a better option or what we think is a better option doesn't necessarily mean that everyone... trust us out of the gate. We have to prove the point over time, I think.
Mm, absolutely. And there is still more to come for the payment request API. If the audience was to look for resources to get started or learn more, where would you guys recommend people go?
Yeah, I think that, I think there's a couple of great starting points. I would not recommend reading the spec like Ray did. That is not the most developer friendly way to get started. I think that you could do one of two things. I would recommend a Google search, sorry, Molly, for just like payment request integration guide. And I think that there are two great resources out there, one of which that Microsoft has published on their developer documentation for how you can get started in example code and code samples. We've also published one as Google and you can open up either. The great thing about web APIs and the interoperability is you can open up either one, and the code samples work across both browsers. And I think that's probably the most developer-friendly way to start. There's also, if you're a developer and you're used to like Mozilla's public developer documentation, they also have a great API breakdown that you can reference as well if you're curious about all the options and features available.
Cool. I feel like Zach covered Google and Microsoft. So and then also I actually enjoy reading specs as well. So I would read the spec. I mean, it's good. It's lengthy.
Oh yeah. It's surprisingly short.
I mean, it's actually pretty short compared to other ones, but.
Right. Right.
Only like 35 pages, so.
And I think you guys potentially have some talks coming up, right? Molly, do you have any public appearances or talks coming up regarding the payment request API?
I don't have any coming up, but I'm going to have one. Hopefully I'll have some soon.
Yeah, you should. Oh. You should definitely do a talk on it. I think people would love to hear from Microsoft's perspective.
I agree.
And Zach, I know you have one coming up.
Yeah, I'll be at Google I/O. I think I'm excessively early. I think I have an 8:30 a.m. slot on day two.
Wow.
So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
People are gonna need lots of coffee.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like there's like a party. I think like day one, and I'm like the 8:30 slot the next morning in Mountain View. And I come to San Francisco. I don't know. We'll see again. We'll see how it goes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You should like.
Yeah. It's a little early. Yeah.
Sleep over in Mountain View.
Yeah, I think actually it might have to be sleeping over Mountain View. Otherwise, to face the Bay Area traffic in the morning is, whew, yeah, tough.
Yeah, it's rough. Yeah. How's traffic in Seattle? Is traffic in Seattle bad?
Oh my gosh. So I was just in the Bay Area and I was actually taking an Uber during rush hour. And I'm like, this is nothing compared to Seattle.
Oh, really?
We have the bridges, I think it's the 520 that just is total bottleneck. And you'll just get stuck in there for an hour on the bridge. And there's nothing more fun than being stuck in traffic on a bridge, especially when it's storming.
Yeah. Storming. Yeah. Yeah. Zach, do you go to Seattle often?
So yeah, I used to actually fly out maybe a couple times a quarter, mm-hmm. once a quarter to meet with, in fact, one of Molly's colleagues who also works on Edge, and we would meet in the early days to talk about payment requests. And I was actually always amazed at how horrible the traffic was. The first time I rented a car, and I never did that again because it's just not worth it. And if you take a cab from the airport to their office in Microsoft, you can take the HOV lane. And what I find amazing about Seattle is that people actually respect the HOV lane. Like in the Bay Area, everyone just says screw it because everyone calculates that the probability of me getting a ticket is once every 3 months I get a ticket and that's $400, and they just factor into their cost of commute. Whereas in Seattle, it's everyone respects it. I can't quite make sense of it. And so I love it.
Did you see the three person HOV lane that we have in Seattle? We don't even have two person HOV lane or, two passenger HOV lanes. We have three. So
wow.
Yep.
Who is that? Yep. Two passengers.
The Bay Bridge has those two. Yeah, I know.
It's ridiculous. But only there though. It's super rare. Yeah.
Only there. Yeah. Exactly. Only there. Exactly. That one stretch. But
cool. Well, we are coming up to our time limit. Molly, do you have anything you would like to plug?
Yeah. So, as you guys may know, the Creators Update was released April 11th. You guys can test the payment request API in the new update of Microsoft Edge. So that's available. I'll give you, Ray, some links to some demos and all kinds of stuff developers can use and play with.
Cool. And how will people find you on the web, Molly?
Well, you could find me on Twitter. I'm not super active on it, but I do like to read Twitter quite a bit. So Molly A. Dalton. So that's my handle.
Great, great. And Zach, do you have anything you would like to plug?
I like that you call it a handle, Molly. Is that still the word that we use? It's what's your handle? That feels very old school web. I don't know. School web.
I don't know. I am on Twitter. I don't know these things.
it's the formal term for Skype.
Yeah. It's what's your handle? And I'm I don't know. It feels so early web days. Things I would plug, of course, I would encourage all developers to give payment requests a shot. It's from a code standpoint, it's really simple. It's a few lines of JavaScript and a couple of promises and you're ready to go. We have great documentation on either the Edge site or on the Google developer documentation site. You can basically copy and paste your way into happiness. and we think it's great for developers, but I said this at CDS, but payment request is not designed for developers. It's not you already have an easy way of life as a developer to accept payments these days. Payment request is designed for users. It's because if a brand new user comes to your site and you don't know who they are, you have no choice but to put them through a form flow asking the same subset of information that they've answered 1,000 times over again on the web. Whereas if these users have Google and Microsoft accounts, we've already got their data. We'd like to share it with you. Payment request is in some ways a consent UI. It's a way to say that, yes, I would like to share my data with merch, bobsdonuts.com to buy something. And so I think that think of it from a user perspective and about what would be good for them and about leveraging data that they already have. And so I would also say that we're available in Chrome on Android, of course. Desktop is in the works and coming soon. So if you have a particular adventurous developer out there and you want to test our desktop implementation, you can. You can jump into Chrome Flags and you can search for experimental web platform features and the web payments flag. And if you enable those, you can actually start to see the progress that we're making on desktop. But you'll need an early Chrome dev version of Chrome. So again, I encourage people to try that out and let them do that. And of course, I suppose if you are up bright and early on some day for Google I/O, the day I don't know, and you have nothing else to do at 8:30 a.m., I encourage you to tune into my my talk. So I have not just me talking to myself.
Sweet. And I would like to plug Microsoft Edge. It is really, really good. So everyone, please, please try it. If you do, then maybe Microsoft will make it cross-platform. So Microsoft, please, please, please make it cross-platform. Everybody will love you for it. It is a really solid browser and super performant. I hate to say, it is faster than Chrome in some aspects. I love Chrome. Developer tools are awesome. But everyone, please give Microsoft Edge a shot. Cool. Well, thank you all very much for joining us. Oh, by the way, Zach, how will people find you on the web?
Oh, right. I forgot about that part of the question. Yeah, you can find me. I am on Twitter. My handle, as Molly said, is Zach K. So Z-A-C-H-K. I'm mainly these days tweet about my spackling abilities, which I think are pretty top notch. So if you have a hole in your wall, let me know. I know how to fix it.
Sweet. I might have to hear you about that. Cool. Well, thank you all very much for joining us. And thank everyone else for joining us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate us on iTunes. It really helps. You can find more Modern Web podcasts and meetups on Twitter at modern.web and on the web at modern-web.org. We'll see you soon in the next episode. Yeah!